let's do a show of hands. How many of you have gotten an email from a pilot saying that I qualified for an EB2? All right. Good. All right. Generally speaking, unless, you know, a pilot is bringing something exceptional to the country, that's not... That's one of those viral things that somebody posted on Google that just by having an advanced degree... Go ahead.
Well, this immigration attorney published an article talking about how it would be possible to do airline pilots. And so I think that might be the nub of
that, it. Right. That may be like patient zero of... But most of employment-based attorneys that I talked about get that email. Well, that doesn't happen. I had a conversation with a kid who just graduated from school, and he's working on nuclear codes and getting all these clearances. And he said, "Well, I qualify for a national interest waiver." And I said, "No, you don't." "Yeah, I do." And he goes on a 20-minute rant on how big his job is. And no, you're not. You're just a kid at a school. and that matters. You know, what kind of person are you telling the story of this matters. All right. Luckily for us, and I mentioned this in the article, and I think it was December 27, 2016, where Donna Saar, and I'll probably mispronounce it in the course of this talk, in a matter of Donna Saar came over the AAO, and it modified, I would like to say favorably, the national interest waiver category for people, because it did away mainly with the national in scope requirement, and it gave us three, which is really four requirements. Why do I say four? Because the first prong has two requirements. So basically, how you win in this game, you need four out of four. You know, you need to hit those four. In my humble opinion, before we go into the details of them, the first two are the toughest one. If you get through substantial merit and national importance, especially if you're representing an entrepreneur or an innovator or someone or an investor, you know, the rest of them, you know, the well position and the balance that you do between that between the position and the job offer should be easy. All right, let's get into the meat of it. All right, substantial. The first prong is you need to have the four national proposed endeavor for both substantial merit and national importance. What the hell is substantial merit? Who knows? Before you take on this case, in any of those cases, you need to read Donna Saar and kind of read it for every case that you do. Because that's the only guidance that we have so far. And your goal is, how can I equate my client to those three or four paragraphs that the AAO laid out? Okay. So the endeavor merit has to be demonstrated in a range of areas such as business, entrepreneurialism, and it has to have the potential to create significant economic impact may be favorable. For example, endeavors related to research, pure science, and furtherance of human knowledge may qualify, whether or not the potential accomplishment in those fields are likely to translate. And so you have the potential of economic impact, okay? Not little impact, significant economic impact. All right. The first thing that you need to do is define the endeavor. What it is that this person is coming over to see, what projects, what achievements he or she has. What are you doing? I always think that our goal, when I visualize this, is, you know, the officer is sitting with a bunch of printed out RFE or denial paragraphs, and your goal is to keep the officer's hand from picking that paragraph and putting it into your decision. All right? Because, you know, once you have a couple of RFEs or a couple of denials, you kind of know exactly, you know, their boilerplate language. All right? So you have to define, it's not only, well, he's an engineer and he's doing engineer stuff. No, he is an engineer, and how is he going to improve the field? Doesn't have to be a super field. It has to be a field. All right? Now I'll give you an example. I represented a lady who all her business was to export mobile homes into Mexico. Okay? You know, mobile homes in the U.S. have this stigma that, you know, if you live in a mobile home, you're not in your best, you know, socioeconomic situation, what have you. But she found a way to sell them in a lot of mining companies in Mexico where construction is really difficult. So she came in with those, you know, they set him up, and, you know, the miners live there, and they live happily ever after. You know, she was doing $2 or $3 million a year. That was great. Guess who was our greatest ally?